Currently 34 degrees under mostly cloudy skies at our studios on East Wausau Avenue in Wausau. I am Chad Holmes, and welcome to the Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Got ourselves a terrific show lined up. At least I hope it is a terrific show until 4 p.m. Coming up in about 8 minutes or so, we'll be joined from the Wausau Performing Arts Foundation and the Grand Theater, the Executive Director, Sean Wright, talking about some great shows coming up as we get closer and closer to the holiday season. And the Grand Theater, always one of the top attractions during the run-up to Christmas. And some great holiday shows coming up, and we'll talk about that and a whole bunch more with Sean Wright from the Grand coming up in a few minutes at 2:15. And then after the news at the bottom of the hour at 2:33, we'll be joined by Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, talk about his takeaways from Election Day 8 days ago. Ask him about the future as well. What can we expect, say, from Mandela Barnes? What can we expect maybe from Katrina Shanklin? Will she run for the 3rd Congressional District? So we'll talk state politics with Dan Schaefer coming up at 2:33 here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Interesting last night. Donald Trump announces again he's running for president. And coming up later in the show, I'm going to pay a visit to the WSAU website to see what they're talking about, because it's always interesting to see what the other folks here in Wausau, the conservative talk radio station, is talking about. But I will say I read an interesting opinion piece by their top guy over there, Chris Conley, and he's not on the Trump train this time. He's on the DeSantis bus. But it was interesting. I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on, but the idea that you're going to say, well, Donald Trump is not the guy, but Ron DeSantis is. Ron DeSantis is Donald Trump without the bad hair and the pure evil. I mean, policy-wise, they're not going to be any different. Ron DeSantis is a guy that put people on a plane, sent them thousands of miles away without telling them where to go, just to own the lips. And that has been the guiding principle for the Republican Party for quite a while. Own the lips. And one reason why Ron DeSantis is now one of the favorites to become the next presidential nominee is because he understands that and he plays to that part of the Republican base. So Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, yin-yang, heads or tails, doesn't really matter. But I'm going to talk a little bit about what was put into this opinion piece over on WSAU earlier today, because I think it's interesting. I think it's again, one of the reasons why I think it's so nice to have here in Wausau now a different point of view. And we have to thank Sage Weil and Mike Crute and Civic Media for bringing it here to Bow Falls Radio, a different point of view. But I have no problem with having another point of view across town as well. But it's just interesting to compare. And I'm going to do a little comparing coming up in the next hour. Also want to remind you that Wednesday is always a very busy day for myself because, and actually during the winter sports season, it's going to be very busy all the time because now, starting last night, I made a trek over to Loyal for Marathon High School Girls Basketball. I'll have Marathon Girls Hoops tomorrow. We'll have Warrior Girls Hoops, Wausau West next week, Wausau West Hockey, Newman Basketball. It's going to be a busy winter, but every Wednesday, I don't have just one two-hour talk show. I have two-hour talk shows. Right now, until 4 o'clock, of course, the Chad Holmes Show. And then coming up from 6 till 8 tonight, another edition of the Big High School Sports Show. And tonight is sort of a transitional night. We're going to wrap up basically the fall portion of our schedule for the first hour. I'll be joined by Paul Novinsky, the former Mosinee head football coach. It'll be his final appearance on the program, and we're going to say goodbye to Paul Novinsky tonight. As we talk football, we'll have the Newman Catholic High School head football coach, Paul Miklik, join us at 6:20. Talk about the Cardinals state championship victory over Belmont last week. Second straight state championship for Newman, 29 consecutive wins. We'll talk about that at 6:20 with Paul Miklik. And then at 7 o'clock, we will turn the page on the fall sports season, turn to the winter sports seasons, get ahead to basketball and hockey coverage. And my co-host during the winter sports season is the former Newman Catholic head boys basketball coach, Jeff Gress. Last night was the first night of activity in high school girls basketball. Hope you're with me over in Loyal. Good start for the Marathon Red Raiders, a 44-35 win over Loyal. But Jeff Gress and myself will talk about some of the action from last night and preview the season with the boys and girls basketball and touch on a little bit of hockey as well. So again, hopefully after the Devil's Advocates, I know you'll stick around from 4 till 6. Stick around then after that with me from 6 until 8 p.m. for the big high school sports show tonight right here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO. Again, coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area. But coming up in about 2.5 minutes after we take a quick break, I'll be joined from the WASA Performing Arts Foundation and the Grand Theater by Sean Wright. That's coming up next as we continue here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO.
Your head, you think you're mad, too unstable, kicking in chairs and knocking down tables in a restaurant in a West End town. Call the police as a madman.
And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show here on this Wednesday afternoon, 2:15. Overcast skies, about 34 degrees right now. But we're getting closer and closer to the holidays. In fact, 8 days away from Thanksgiving, and then, of course, Christmas after that. And as I said earlier, one of the places that WASA folks really focus on when we get to this time of year, when we get towards the holidays, so many great shows at the Grand Theater. And to talk about what's going on with the Performing Arts Foundation and the Grand Theater, joined by the executive director, Sean Wright. And Sean, great to have you back in.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be here.
Was 2 weeks ago before the New York Marathon?
It was before the New York Marathon.
So before we start, you went to New York and you participated. How'd it go?
It was an incredible experience. It was a very warm, very humid day. In fact, the warmest marathon on record.
Oh, man.
So it was a challenge, but it to be able to run through the five boroughs with 50,000 other people and the support that people have. I mean, once you get off the Verrazano Bridge and you're into Brooklyn, other than being on the Queensboro Bridge, every other step of the way, there are spectators. You run through these amazing neighborhoods. You, of course, run into all the boroughs and then to finish into Central Park. So, yeah, it was quite the experience. And, I'll be happy to run it again, perhaps on a day more suited for running.
After you mentioned it the last time we talked, I was thinking about that, because when you get involved in something that, I mean, you train and you obviously, get prepared to run a marathon, but then there's this adrenaline factor when it's a big event. It could be in any sport, it could be in a play,
it
could
show,
be anything,
yeah.
Exactly. How do you handle that adrenaline factor where maybe you start the race and all of a sudden it sort of hits you that, holy cow, I still got another 20 miles to go.
Yeah, that's always the biggest challenge in a marathon, or really any of the races of distance, half marathon or longer, is you have that moment where you go, oh boy, you look at your watch and go, I'm a long way from home. And, it's kind of the same way on an event day where you open the doors and you get that surge of energy as people come in, and all of a sudden you look at your watch and you think, oh, it's 2 minutes to showtime. And you're like, nope, it's 58 minutes to showtime. We opened the doors 2 minutes ago. We still have a long way to go. So you've got to pace yourself in show running and running.
Well, congratulations on doing that. It must have been just fantastic. But let's talk about what's going on. And actually, I want to start off because yesterday I got this really nice press release talking about what's called the Jerry Ensemble. And it really caught my attention because I'm around high school kids a lot with the high school sports aspect. And I've also seen theatrical productions. And could you talk about what the Jerry Ensemble is, because it's part of the PAF and the Grand Theater? And it really caught my attention when I got this yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jerry Awards is a program. It's actually part of a national program called the Jimmy Awards, and it's sort of the high school version of the Tonys. Hmm. And the Overture Center in Madison created the Jerry Awards, and a number of years ago asked us to join as a partner, and since has added the Viterbo University over in La Crosse. And what this allows for is it allows high school productions to be reviewed by professional reviewers. There are nominations and recognition, and so it's very, very cool for these students to get, and not just students, but teachers and all those who are involved in the production to get feedback, and to get recognition. And so the Overture Center started an ensemble, sort of an all-star team, mm-hmm. of sorts, of high school students in the Madison area. And when we were initially in the program, we started having discussions. Katie Lang, our Director of Development Community Engagement, who oversees the Jerry Ensemble, saying, well, we have amazing, talented students here in our region. Let's create our own Jerry Ensemble. Mm-hmm. And so we have, and the Central Wisconsin Jerry Ensemble just continues to grow, and not just in numbers, in terms of the students who rehearse or who auditioned, the students who were selected, and through the footprint. You know, we've got students who drive over from Eau Claire. Mm. We've got students up from, the Northwoods. We've got
Lakeland.
Lakeland, basically from, all the major districts
Rhinelander.
In the area. Exactly. And what these students do is they work under the direction of Katie and our director, Marsha Deloney. They get sort of professional hands-on training, rehearse at the Conservatory of Music, who's gracious enough to give us space, and then they perform throughout the year. And, so they perform at, they just actually performed at the curling club when the Scottish curling team was here. They'll perform at the Conservatory's holiday performance. They do performances before our shows. We usually do some recorded performances. That way it gives these students something to put in their audition files, mm-hmm. As they go off to college. And then the year culminates with their own concert, the Jerry Cabaret. But, it's about performance, but it's also about the opportunity to learn, not just from, from the directors and those, but from their fellow students. And that's what you hear from the students. It's the, it's the opportunity to, to do a group number with students from schools from all across the region, or to do a duet. You may go to Wausau East, but you're doing a duet with a student from Rhinelander, mm-hmm. and you're learning from each other and becoming better at your craft at the same time. So they are incredibly talented young men and women, and we're so happy to give them an opportunity to shine.
And I was in contact with Katie Lang actually earlier today, and she's going to try to line up a couple of students and come here next Wednesday.
Fantastic.
On your off Wednesday.
Good. That finally, we'll get some talented people in here on Wednesday at 2:15.
Absolutely. Actually, we'll do it at 3:15 because 2:15 is the Sean Wright time.
Okay.
We don't want too much pressure on those.
On Wednesday afternoon, the talent will come in next week.
Yeah, so Katie Langan, she says she'll line up a couple of students as well. So next Wednesday, we'll talk more about the Central Wisconsin Jerry Ensemble right here on the program. Well, as we get, the 16th of November? Yeah. You got yourself a pretty big show coming up this week, don't you?
We do. It really kicks off our holiday programming. It's a Million Dollar Quartet Christmas. Of course, Million Dollar Quartet was the Broadway show that, tells the story of the famous night with Johnny Cash and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and Carl Perkins at Sun Studios in Memphis. And this is the holiday version. So you'll hear some of the songs that that you knew and loved from Million Dollar Quartet and the songs you know and love from those incredible artists, but also a nice holiday piece to it as well. And that really kicks off a very busy holiday schedule for us. Mm-hmm. And, tickets, we've got about 150 tickets left. So, it is selling very, very well, but there's still an opportunity for people to come out if they want to enjoy that show.
That's tomorrow night, right?
Friday night.
You're right. I was looking at the wrong date.
I sure hope it's Friday night because that's what we're planning on.
I got to keep my eyes focused here. It is Friday night. Perfect Friday night to go out and still, and yeah, you said 100, hey, jump on those tickets
exactly.
right away.
Jump on those final tickets and come out and see us. Yes, tomorrow we have competition with a bunch of, with about 2,000 pre-K to two second graders seeing Click Clack Moo.
Yeah, I saw that. What is that?
That is a fabulous show based on a book by the same name that's right in that that wheelhouse of those pre-K to two students. And you know, I've got a niece who's in kindergarten, and when I told my sister, she was like, oh, she loves Click Clack. And so yes, yeah, so really we love those shows, part of the Aspirus Arts and Education series, exposing the next generation right. of audiences to shows. There's loud in the theater, and then there's the sound of 1,100 pre-K to two kids who when that first, artist comes on the stage in costume.
So fun, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, just absolutely fun. Again, we're talking to Sean Wright, the executive director of the Wausau Performing Arts Foundation and the Grand Theater here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. I'm a history nut. Mm-hmm. I love history. And I see next Tuesday, you have a program called All Is Calm, The Christmas Truce of 1914. Is that a World War One story?
World War One story about the time in the holiday season where the troops on both sides came together on their own for a ceasefire for one night on the front lines to bury their dead, to sing songs, to share a meal. And and it is a true story. It's been adapted by the incredible theater Latte Da out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, where they've done the production for years. And this year they're actually not doing the production in Minneapolis. They're doing a different holiday production. So they are coming to the Grand. They'll actually spend Sunday and Monday fully rehearsing and teching the show, dress rehearsing the show, and then we'll actually be the touring debut and the debut because they aren't doing it in Minneapolis of All Is Calm on Tuesday night. It is a absolutely breathtaking show, an incredible show, incredible talent. We had it back in 2018, and I can tell you, I don't know if I've ever heard the theater so quiet, just as people were just so absorbed by the story, by the moment. It's the perfect holiday show because you walk out of there and if you can't feel better about humanity,
right?
It's just we're so excited to have it back.
You need some light snow falling when you walk out.
Yeah, absolutely. If I remember correctly, we had the little bit of snow that when we had it back in 18, and yeah, you just sort of walked out and went, took that deep breath, and it was just such a moving experience, but so beautifully done artistically as well. So
I imagine that for yourself to have a group come in and actually rehearse a couple of days, you may want to peek in there and take a watch, because to watch the process that these folks do is so impressive, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and they are, Theater Latte Da is an incredible company, and to have them at the Grand, we're excited, and I want to give credit to them. It wasn't part of their initial plan. They had planned to rehearse in Minneapolis, and then they were going to debut the show the day after Thanksgiving. And we really, really wanted them here. But then, of course, we jumped right into Nutcracker and a lot of other things. And, we said, how can we make this work? And they said, well, can you give us rehearsal space? Yes, let's do it. And
that great?
Yeah.
I mean, again, and you talked about this before. It's developing these relationships and you treating them right, they mm-hmm. treating you right, and all of a sudden, something that may not be possible, all of a sudden becomes possible.
Absolutely,
it?
No, but great for all involved. They get an opportunity to tech their show in a theater itself and not a rehearsal space. They get to really do that and fine tune anything that needs fine tuning. And we get an incredible show that we get to share with our audience. And, a perfect way to sort of kick off a holiday weekend.
Yeah, Thanksgiving week to have a show like that. Fantastic. And tickets available, correct?
Yeah, we still have some tickets available. They're definitely going fast. It was a sellout last time. And we're looking to have a great crowd again.
Okay. And again, for folks who may want to come by on Friday night, or next Tuesday, what's the best way to go and
absolutely.
Get those tickets?
Easiest way is to visit grandtheater.org. We've announced a couple of new shows, a rescheduled show for Art Garfunkel next April after about 3 years of working to get that rescheduled. So, visit the website for tickets, for information about new shows, and information for a very busy holiday season ahead.
So the schedule never is in stone for you guys, is it?
Oh, no. Far from it.
Well, Sean, thank you again. Congrats on the New York Marathon. Mm-hmm. Enjoy this coming week, and then couple weeks' time, we'll bring you back and talk about what should be a fantastic Christmas season.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Sean Wright, again, from the Wausau Performing Arts Foundation and the Grand Theater, the executive director, joining us. And again, don't forget, next Wednesday, we'll talk more about the PAF and their Central Wisconsin Jerry Ensemble. Have a couple of students coming by and talk to them as well, coming up next Wednesday at 3:15. We're going to take a break and then come back. We'll be talking politics. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, he'll give his thoughts on what happened last week on Election Day and what to expect in Wisconsin politics coming up in the next session of the legislature. That's coming up next. First Day News Update coming up here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Welcome back, Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Again, thanks to Sean Wright from the Wausau Performing Arts Foundation Grand Theater for joining us. Again, Sean joins us on Wednesdays every other week talking about some of the great activities going on at the Grand Theater. And right now, very happy to welcome back to the program from the Recombobulation area. Terrific site. Again, if you want to keep up to speed on what's going on in Wisconsin politics, I would encourage you to visit and then also subscribe. We're joined by the man, Dan Schaefer. And Dan, again, thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, and appreciate the kind words about the Recombobulation area.
Hey, I enjoy reading it. It's been a terrific subscription for myself, and I'm sure anybody else who wants to keep a close eye on Wisconsin politics really gets some great information. And I have to start off by, I know folks here on Bow Falls Radio heard you on Monday. We're substituting for Kristen Bry. I was talking to you just briefly before we went on the air. Did you enjoy being the host of a show instead of being a guest?
Yeah, a little different experience, but I enjoyed it. It was it came together really quick. The producer, Jane Matinere, had me. I was scheduled to come in on Thursday, but then they had a little bit of a schedule change. So within less than 24 hours notice, I had to jump in and host. But it went really well. I was very lucky to get a lot of great guests for the show. So that it didn't have to just be me talking for 3 hours.
As a host, I tell you, that is the key to doing a show. Get good guests and then ride the coattails, and that's the way to win an election as well. We've got plenty to talk about. We'll talk about your article and your takeaways from the election that you posted on the Recombobulation area, but we just had the news update, and I just found it interesting that today the Senate Republicans in Washington voted to keep Mitch McConnell as their leader after a challenge from Senator Rick Scott. And the man who nominated Rick Scott was Wisconsin's very own senior senator, Ron Johnson. I thought it was such a Ron Johnson thing to do, because if you've wrote about this a lot, Ron Johnson is a very loyal guy. When the Eline family and Diane Hendricks gave him lots of money for his campaigns, he came through for them with a spot in that Trump tax bill. And Rick Scott in the Senate campaign committee helped him out the last few months. It was a Ron Johnson kind of thing to do, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's just perfectly Ron Johnson. And his effort to try to put Rick Scott into that position lasted, 24 hours, if that? Of course, maybe we should all take cues from Senate Republicans here and just start to ignore Ron Johnson when he comes up with some of these crazy ideas whether he's on conservative media or trying to advance something. And, it's just a bunch of nonsense. And I don't think there was any expectation that Republicans were actually going to, change gears and put Rick Scott into the seat that Mitch McConnell has been in for so long. But it was just a weird, futile attempt from Ron Johnson to do something, but who knows?
Let's talk right about the Senate race. And basically, the way you were writing and in your interviews here on Civic Media going into the election day, pretty much the way it was, that Ron Johnson was the favorite, Mandela Barnes was running a solid campaign, giving himself a chance to win, ultimately came up 1 point short. I guess your main takeaway from what's been about a year and a half marathon in this U.S. Senate race as we cross the finish line, main takeaways, what we learned last Tuesday.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we were going into last Tuesday, I was, you know, checking around with some sources, seeing what people were expecting, and most people, and just about everybody, was expecting Ron Johnson to win re-election. You know, he had been the favorite throughout, and that had never really changed. You know, there was one kind of outlier poll in August, right after the primary, that showed Barnes with a lot of support. But I think throughout, you know, Ron Johnson was the favorite. But in that final pre-election poll, we started to see the race tightening a little bit. And, you know, I dug in and kind of looked under the hood of that poll, and I was like, well, I think Barnes has a chance here. And, you know, Johnson was no longer up 6 points. He was up 2. And I think, you know, Barnes had showed some really strong momentum going into that final stretch. There was the, you know, I thought he did really well in the debate. I thought he had a really important rally in Milwaukee with former President Barack Obama. The momentum was there, but it just wasn't quite enough. And it was, you know, the results of the election, 27,000 votes in what proved to be the closest Senate race in the state of Wisconsin in more than a century. 1914 was the last time that we had a Senate race in this state that was that close. So, in what was thought to be a Republican advantage year, with a lot of money behind him, Ed being the favorite in the race the whole way, Ron Johnson, despite being an unpopular senator, he had the advantage. He had the wind at his back, but Mandel Barnes just came so agonizingly close to pulling off the upset. So I think people are going to be picking this one over for quite some time. But I think, you know, it's just an unbelievably close race, and we have unbelievably close races frequently in Wisconsin, and, you know, just another one here to add to the list.
Again, we're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. What about the future for Mandela Barnes? I think he can definitely keep his head held high. He ran a classy campaign. He did not get into the mud like Ron Johnson did during the course of that campaign. Not a Senate opening in 2 years, as Tammy Baldwin will be running for re-election. Do we see Mandela Barnes perhaps line up a run for governor if Tony Evers decides this is his last term in office? Or is there another route that Mandela Barnes can take to, as a very young man, keep his name out there in terms of Wisconsin politics?
Yeah, it's hard to say. And that was one of the things that I wrote about when I did a piece for the New York Times about Mandela Barnes, noting, you know, his age and how he, as a 35-year-old running in this race, you know, it's indicative of a generational shift, I think, that is happening in politics at large. And I think, you know, he handled this race with a lot of grace, a lot of positivity. He's gonna, you know, he came incredibly close in a race nobody really was expecting him to win. So I think he still has a bright future in politics. You know, who knows what direction that might take. You know, it could be something in state politics again. Could be running for the congressional seat in Milwaukee if Glenn Moore decides to retire within the next couple terms here. Who knows? You know, obviously he is from Milwaukee, so that could make sense there. But I think no matter what route he takes, I think he's going to be a really important voice for Wisconsin and for the coalition as a representative of kind of the coalition that he helped build. You know, one of the things that I wrote in my takeaways piece that you referenced at the Recombobulation area was that this campaign, this coalition that he helped build, is the beginning of something. It's not over now, even though he lost the election. It's the beginning of something. It's the beginning of that generational shift. And I think people will look back at this election as a real signpost in what that shift is going to be.
Why didn't Milwaukee show up at the levels they have in the past? You mentioned the Barack Obama rally, which I thought was fantastic. I thought he was at the top of his game. I thought the Democrats came together in a great way for that event. You said it, Mandela Barnes, a Milwaukee native, a proud Milwaukeean. Why weren't the numbers there in terms of the turnout that maybe we've seen in the past?
Well, I think, you know, everybody always likes to blame Milwaukee. And I think it's important to note that it is not just Milwaukee that had turnout down. It was not just the city of Milwaukee. The turnout was kind of down throughout the Milwaukee region. And I think part of that is just a comparison to 2018, which is just off the charts turnout. Mm-hmm. So turnout is down from 4 years ago. But turnout in 2018 resembled more of a presidential election year than it did a typical midterm election year. So I think you have that factor there as well. You know, obviously the race for the Senate race with Tammy Baldwin and the governor's race with Scott Walker. Milwaukee had about had it with Scott Walker at that point. So I think there were a lot of people really motivated to vote against him in 2018. But, you know, I think you have to at least consider the part of part of the process that we've seen here in Wisconsin with voter suppression tactics.
Yep.
from state Republicans. You know, Milwaukee really successfully used voting by Dropbox in the 2020 election during the height of the pandemic. That was taken away, of course, by, conservative rulings over the past couple of years. So that is, you know, I don't think Dropbox's being there maybe would not have changed the election at large, changed the results. But I think it's a factor. I think it's a factor in people being able to, you know, always having to change methods of voting here in Milwaukee. And I think just overall, I think there's been, just messaging to kind of suggest that maybe, hey, Milwaukee, your votes don't count. You know, it's been a difficult stretch for that. So I think, I think that's part of it too. And I think, I think maybe sometimes, I don't necessarily know if this is the case with the Barnes campaign. He spent a lot of time in Milwaukee, but I think Democrats can sometimes take these Democratic strongholds for granted. Assume that the votes are going to be there in places like Milwaukee, and you really have to, you have to get that ground game going. You have to spend the time. You have to get people motivated to get to the polls. So, a number of factors with that. I think it's easy to suggest that that's exactly where those 27,000 votes that Mandela Barnes was short would come from. But at the same time, Mandela Barnes was running about 2-3% behind Evers in the majority of the state. And I think that's kind of the expectation that you get with an incumbent versus a challenger. Mm-hmm. And, in Milwaukee County, Mandela Barnes was about even with Evers. So he did have strong support in his home county.
And let's talk about Evers, because you've said it. Wisconsin is known for these razor-thin statewide campaigns in this century, going back to 2000. Tony Evers' win over Tim Michaels, based on recent history, is pretty much a landslide, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3.5%. That's a Wisconsin landslide at this point, right?
Exactly.
really a resounding victory for him over Tim Michaels. Michaels really did underperform, particularly in suburban counties around Milwaukee. I focused a lot on that in my takeaways piece. Mm-hmm. Waukesha County, a really key county, the third largest county in the state of Wisconsin. And even though, that was really the Republican stronghold for so much time, and now with the party becoming more rural, kind of losing some of that suburban support, that really seems to be changing. I got a couple numbers for you that I'm pulling up about Waukesha County in particular. So in Waukesha County, no Democratic candidate for governor gained more than 35% of the vote at any point this century, but Tony Evers received almost 40% of the vote in Waukesha County. And then in terms of raw vote totals, I mentioned the population there in the county, there were about 54,000 votes for Democrat Mary Burke in 2014 when she lost to Scott Walker. And in 2022, more than 88,000 people in the county voted for Tony Evers. So that's a pretty significant change in 8 years. In Waukesha County and in Ozaukee County, which actually saw the biggest increase from 2018 to 2020 with the margins for the Democrat, the Waukesha counties are breaking up. And so they're no longer that red wall in the Milwaukee suburbs that it used to be for so long.
We got about a minute to go before a break, but real quickly, does Tony Evers get the credit for being a winner like he is? I mean, the guy just wins elections. It's really impressive. I mean, you go back 4 years, that huge Democratic primary, people thought, oh, he doesn't have enough juice. He's not exciting enough. But the people really like him, and he's really good at governing, isn't he?
People keep underestimating him. And I think people, now that he's won a second term, maybe people will stop underestimating him. I've been calling him two-term Tony over the past couple weeks here, now that he's back for another 4 years. And I think, you know, he really demonstrated his strength in around the state. And, you know, I loved some of the lines that he had in his victory speech last week, where he was talking about how boring wins. And boring won another four-year term here in Wisconsin.
We got to take a quick break, but we'll come back, talk to Dan Schaefer about a little bit closer to home here, what happened last Tuesday and what to expect as we head into the future as well. So, again, more with Dan Schaefer. We'll wrap up the hour with Dan in just a moment. This is the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. Again, joined by Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. Dan, real quickly, before I turn to another topic, I mentioned that in 2 years there's another Senate race. Do you have any idea who the Republicans may be running? Anybody, any rumbles on Republicans that may get involved against Tammy Baldwin?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I have to imagine they're trying to figure that out right now as well. I have to think Mike Gallagher, the congressman from the 8th district in Wisconsin, is at least going to get mentioned in the conversation. You know, he ran unopposed in this election, and in every other election that he's been on the ballot for, he's kind of outrun his Republican counterparts. So I think he would be my way early Don favorite to be running in that race.
Let's talk 3rd congressional district, because right south of here in Stevens Point, a big Democratic stronghold in the 3rd. It used to be part of the 7th until the maps were changed a couple of cycles ago. But I noticed for months, and now we hear all this talk about how the Democratic National Congressional Campaign Committee left Brad Paff out there, and he ended up losing a rather tight race to Derek Van Orden by 4 points. I could see it coming for the last months, to be honest with you, because there's no pushback against Derek Van Orden in the Wausau TV market, which reaches Stevens Point. What are the rumbles after the race? Because right now they're still counting votes to make sure that the Republicans carry the House of Representatives. Was that a lost opportunity for the Democrats?
Oh, it absolutely was. And you know, I think with some of their reporting had indicated that Van Orden outspent Paff 4-1.
Yep.
And you know, the money makes such a difference in these races. It's ugly. It's an ugly business, but it is such an important factor to be able to reach people in these campaigns and using the money that will go behind the advertising to do that. And I think it's such a missed opportunity, not only just because it is a blue district going red. You know, Van Orden is the type of candidate who didn't do well in these midterm elections. You know, a lot of these MAGA Republicans, the election deniers, you know, they didn't really do well in a lot of races. They underperformed in a lot of races. So I think you have to think that there's just a real missed opportunity here in western Wisconsin to, you know, to keep that seat Democratic, to put somebody like Brad Paff in Congress. It's just such a tough one. And, you know, I have to admit that this is probably the district in Wisconsin I know the least, for whatever reason. I have not spent as much time there as I have in other parts of the state. So I you know, I'm scratching my head on this one. You know, it really seems like a missed opportunity. And I think there were a lot of people kind of sounding the alarm throughout the race, saying like, hey, this is winnable. This is a winnable race for the Democrats. Where is the cavalry here? Where is it going? You know, it's going to just be that much more difficult for Democrats to win that back. Obviously, it's going to continue to be most likely Wisconsin's most competitive congressional race. in for the foreseeable future, unless things, you know, really change in, you know, perhaps something like the first district. But I, you know, it's just once somebody is an incumbent, as we saw with Ron Johnson, it just becomes that much more difficult to flip that seat.
I think you hit it on the head. Once you get into office, it's much more difficult to get you out of office, especially in the House of Representatives. And one little tip to you, I had Katrina Shanklin on the program on Monday, and the last question I asked her, I said, you know, some folks, myself, mentioning you as a potential candidate against Derek Van Orden, I thought you'd just wave it off, but she said no. It's something she's considered, that people have talked to her about it, and that... that she is going to think about it. So that's one potential Democratic candidate who performed exceptionally well. And I guess to turn to the next topic, some of the maybe best stories of election night. And I think Shanklin was one because that was a Republican targeted district and she ended up winning by 15 points here in central Wisconsin. Any other stories that came out of last Tuesday that were maybe surprises on the positive side for folks on the left?
Yeah, I think you definitely hit it right on the head with Katrina Shanklin there. She was one of the big winners from the night in the legislature. You know, the Republicans saw the shifts happening around her district, really targeted that seat. But she actually won by even a greater margin this year than she did in 2020. So she's definitely one of the big winners from the other night. I think that victory is kind of part of another important victory for Democrats in the legislature, which is the preventing a Republican supermajority. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it was incredibly close. It really came down to a handful of seats. Democrat Steve Doyle winning in the 94th and Lori Palmieri winning in the 54th really sealed it for the Democrats to prevent that supermajority. And they just came agonizingly close to winning, kind of like the Barnes race, to winning three more. You know, there I think it was less than 1,000 votes spread over three races, and they would have basically broken even with the Republicans, even after they brought forth, you know, a gerrymandered map that was even more gerrymandered than the one we saw for the past decade. So Republicans tried to draw themselves a map that would give them a path to the supermajority. Democrats were able to prevent that and came incredibly close, you know, races in the 33rd district just outside of Dane County, the 84th district in the southwest suburbs of Milwaukee, and the 73rd district in the far northwest corner of the state up by Superior. Between those three races, they came really, really close to drawing even. I think, you know, some credit has to go to the Democrats there, new minority leader Glenn Neubauer, who I got a chance to talk to on Monday on Asgo's Wisconsin. You know, she was a big part of that effort. And, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, I think that's a big story to come out of the night.
And real quickly, we had 90 seconds to go. And I think it's a sort of a piggyback on that discussion for the Democrats to have any opportunity to get closer to a majority. This Supreme Court race coming up in a few months is vital. It will give Democrats a chance to get these gerrymandered maps overturned if the liberal candidate could win coming up in the spring, correct?
Cannot overstate the importance of that race. You know, I wrote last spring in May that we had 12 months to restore democracy in Wisconsin. Step one was reelecting Tony Evers, done and done. Step two is winning that Supreme Court race. And now that we have Evers reelected, the focus will turn to that race. That is going to be an incredibly, incredibly important race. That is going to be the best chance that liberals, progressives, Democrats, however you want to characterize them, will have to win control of that court in a very, very long time. So it's just an absolutely huge, huge, huge race. April 4th in Wisconsin.
It never stops, does it?
That's right.
And that's why people need to get to the recombobulation area, become a subscriber, and read what Dan Schaefer has to say. Dan, again, we appreciate it, and hopefully we can get you back on again sometime soon as we get back into the campaign realm for that Supreme Court race coming up in April. But thanks again for spending a few minutes with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Again, Dan Schaefer. More to come here on WXC.